Okay. Good morning. I've had the chance to learn in the past with a number of you, so it's nice to see some familiar faces. For those I don't know, my name is Yaakov Danishevsky. It's a pleasure to meet you, and a pleasure to be here to be part of this Yarchei Kala. So I wanted to talk about the meaning of marriage, the meaning of kiddushin, of marriage in Judaism, in halacha, and what the halachos, what the laws that govern the way that marriage takes place, and the different aspects, the different halachos within marriage, what that can teach us, both in terms of interpersonal relationships, in terms of marriage with an actual spouse, as well as our marriage with Hashem. We have many different sources that depict the relationship between the Jewish people and Hashem in a variety of different ways. And one of the ways that comes up in a number of contexts is that our relationship with Hashem is likened to a marriage. And so I want to talk about what that might mean. So we're going to start by looking at person-to-person marriage, and then we're going to go from there into understanding our relationship with Hashem. Please feel free to speak up, raise your hand, or just call out. I always prefer if it's more conversational and discussion-based. So I have my ideas prepared, but I'm more than happy if people want to bring something up. Okay, so the very first source here, we're going to start with a little bit of a technical halachic topic, and you'll see why I'm delving into that. It's going to start a little bit more in a Gemara based context, and we'll expand from there. So the very beginning of Maseches Kiddushin begins with a Mishnah, and the Mishnah says, the very opening line in the first source here says, "Ha'isha nikneis b'shalosh drachim," that a woman is that a marriage is created, that a man has to do a certain act to create a marriage with a woman in three different ways. There's three possible ways. The kona es atzma b'shtei drachim, and she goes back into her own jurisdiction, meaning the marriage dissolves. What we would call divorce happens in two different ways. What are the three ways that the marriage can take place? Nikneis b'kesef, b'shtar, u'b'biyah. So the three options of how to perform a halachic kiddushin. And kiddushin is actually different than nisuin. So there's two stages of marriage, but we're going to conflate them for the moment. The three different ways that a marriage can take place, that halachically a couple can be considered to be engaged. So it's not the way we think of engagement nowadays. You know, they get down on the knee and say, "Will you marry me?" That does not have halachic engagement significance. But halachic engagement is actually has a lot more laws that actually take place at the engagement. The engagement's already almost pretty much a complete marriage, with some things to the exception. But the three ways are either by giving over money, and the Gemara learns that can include other things of value, it doesn't have to be money itself, or by drawing up a contract, a document that's going to state the commitments of the marriage, or through relations. In any one of those three ways, a marriage can be formed. Okay, so here's the interesting question that comes up here. The Gemara in Kiddushin says that these are the three different ways that it can take place. But there's actually a Yerushalmi. We're going to skip around in the order of the sources for a moment. If you skip to source number 4, I'm not going to read it to you inside, but I want to tell you what it says outside. The Gemara in the Yerushalmi actually entertains a possibility against the Bavli, right? So we have two different traditions of the Gemara, of the Talmud. We have that which was written and the discussions that took place in Bavel. That's the classic Gemara that we typically refer to when people refer to the Gemara. They're typically referring to what's called Talmud Bavli. And then there's also a different tradition, which is the rabbis that were living in Israel at the time, or in Jerusalem, or in those areas, and that's called the Talmud Yerushalmi. That's not as often studied or as often cited, but it's also very, very, very important. And so sometimes there's a lot of overlap, and sometimes there's interesting differences. So the Talmud Yerushalmi has a parallel discussion to the Talmud Bavli. The Talmud Bavli, which is what we just read, says these are the three ways you can have kiddushin: kesef, shtar, or bia. Those are the three ways you can have a marriage be formed halachically. The Talmud Yerushalmi brings those three things up, but it delves into them a little bit more specifically, and it raises a very fascinating possibility. The possibility that the Yerushalmi brings up is you might not be able to do any one of them. You might actually need to do all three. And if you don't do all three, you do not have a halachic kiddushin. The marriage is not formed unless you do all three of them. It's not enough to do one. You have to have all three. The Gemara ends up rejecting that, but it only rejects it because it goes through a lengthy discussion of providing different texts, different psukim in the Torah that show that one is sufficient. But it seriously considers the possibility that you actually need all three. It's not just like a flow, you know, a flippant kind of like, you know, a flyby of like, you know, maybe you need all three. No, you don't. It takes it much more seriously than that and says we need to actually provide sources that show us that one can stand on its own and that you don't need all three, because the Gemara seriously considers the possibility of needing all three. So in the last generation, not so long ago, there was a tremendous scholar, Talmud Chacham, who had fascinating, very creative, and brilliant insights. He wrote a number of svarim called Kuntrasei Shiurim. His name was Rav Gustman. And Rav Gustman in Kuntrasei Shiurim analyzes this Yerushalmi. And he has the following possibility, which is in Source 5. What he says is maybe the reason that you would need all three. Why might you need all three? He says is because in a marriage, there are three primary components. And we're going to see later, there's actually many, many more. But the basic halachic structure of what is taking place in a marriage, right? So you think of like, you know, not to liken marriages to cars, but you think of a car, right? So the car drives, right? But you open up the hood and you look inside and you can see here are the different building blocks of what's going on inside that powers this car to function as it does. So if you open up the hood and you look inside, what are the mechanisms of what's taking place inside a marriage? Halachically, where Gusman says is there's three different aspects. The three aspects, he says, are, number one, that there is a monetary commitment that the couple has to each other in both directions. We'll see that a little bit more later. That in both directions, there are different monetary, financial obligations and commitments that become tied to one another. That's what's called kinyan. So if you look in Source 2, he says, Mivur de yeshnan bekidushin gimel in yanim. Rav Gusman writes, it is clear that in kidushin, there are three different elements. Aleph, kinyan, that's the monetary aspect. Beis, the second, is iser, meaning there are laws that go on, that govern prohibitions of these two people being exclusive to each other, and all sorts of different halachos fall into place when a kiddushin is created with regards to those people's relationship with people outside of their marriage. There's a whole host of different laws that fall into place. That's called iser. So that commitment that creates certain prohibitions to those outside of the marriage, that is the second component of the marriage. It's that exclusivity. And gimel is hisyachdus leishus, is the intimacy that the couple has with each other. Specifically in this context, referring to physical intimacy, but we'll see it expands beyond that. Those are the three kind of pillars or essential aspects of what's taking place in a marriage. So says Rav Gusman brilliantly, perhaps the reason that there are three different options, three different ways of creating kiddushin, creating marriage, is because there are these three different aspects of what's actually going on in a marriage, and each of the pathways to create the marriage is aligned, is aimed at creating one of these three different things. So if you go back to the first source, what was the first way that a person can do kiddushin? Kesef, money. Why does money work to create kiddushin? Because what is kiddushin? One of the essential aspects of a halachic kiddushin is the financial, monetary commitments that the couple has to each other. And therefore, one of the ways you can create kiddushin is by a transaction of money. So kesef is the first way, because kesef parallels the kinyan aspect of the kiddushin. The second way is what's called shtar, again, is this legal document outlining the commitment to each other. And that aligns with the second aspect of kiddushin, with what he calls iser, is the exclusivity and all the laws and prohibitions that come into place when the commitment's created. And the gimel, and the third way, bia, relations, that aligns exactly with the intimacy aspect of the marriage. So each of these three ways of creating kiddushin is not random. It's not like, oh, here are three different ways you can do it. It's three specific ways because they align exactly with the three aspects of what's going to be going on in the marriage. With that said, you can now understand why would the Yerushalmi think that you might need to have all three? And why would it take it so seriously to say, we started before, we said that the Yerushalmi says, you know what, it might not be enough to do one of these three. You might need to do all three of them. And we were wondering why. Why do you need to do all three? Well, now I think it's pretty obvious why you need to do all three. Actually, the question flips. Why wouldn't you need to do all three? Well, why do you need to do all three? Or why would we think you need to do all three? Because the marriage has to have all three components. It has to have the financial commitment, it has to have the prohibitions and the exclusivity, and it has to have the intimacy. So you need to create all three of these things. So you should have to do the mechanism that creates all three, the kesef, shtar, and bia. So Yerushalmi takes it very seriously and says, well, maybe you do need to have all three. In the end, it says you don't. So here's where we always have a question. Well, okay, so why don't you need to have all three? So I remember I had a Rebbe in 11th grade in high school who always used to say when you have in the Gemara what's called a Havamina and a Maskana. So the Havamina is what the Gemara first thought and the Maskana is what the Gemara concludes. So you always have to ask yourself, what changed? How much changed? Right? So we start with an assumption. That's the Havamina. We reject something in that assumption and we come out on the other side with the Maskana, with the conclusion. How much changed from the Havamina to the Maskana? Was it something technical that changed, or was it something fundamental that changed? Meaning, was it that we just changed some small detail, but what we thought in the Havamina is still true, or did we completely reject the Havamina, and the Maskana is saying something completely different than what we thought in the Havamina? So here, what's our Havamina, what's our Maskana? The Havamina is that you need all three ways of creating Kiddushin, because Kiddushin has all three components. Right? That's the Havamina. The Maskana is you only need one of them. So how much changed from the Havamina to the Maskana? So what Rav Gusman suggests is that it's only a technical change. The Havamina really is fundamentally true. Kiddushin, halachic marriage, is made up of all three of those components. The monetary commitment to each other, that pairing of two people together to create their own entity in a financial context, obligations to each other in a financial way. Number two, the exclusivity of all the laws that come into place that make them their own unit as opposed to being open to the rest of the world. And number three, the intimacy. And you need to have three different ways of creating the Kiddushin to create those three results. That's the Havamina. The Maskana is all of that is true. The only thing that changed is that if you do any one of them, it triggers the result of all three. That's how Rav Gusman understands the Yerushalmi. Because the marriage is made up of those three components. So the only thing that changed is how do you get to that result of having all three components. In the Havamina, we thought the way you get to that result is you need to do something specific to create each of the three different components of the relationship. The Maskana is, as long as you do any one of them, you create all three components. Make sense? So far, so good? Okay, cool. So, all of that... Yeah, go ahead.
So, when you said that as long as you do one, so I sometimes wonder, when there's a wedding and the chassan is learning or in school, and they read the and you read the obligations of the chassan to the kala, so they may not necessarily be the ones supporting the marriage.
Because in the end of the day, the point is that he has to be able to provide that for her. So he can accumulate what he needs in order to provide for her in whatever way he wants. But he is committing to that obligation, and vice versa, she is to him also, right? So it doesn't necessarily matter where that's coming from, as long as he is making that they're making that commitment, right? Yeah. Okay. So. Why are we talking about this? Yeah, so it's an interesting halachic discussion, but I think it's also more than that. I think it's interesting, perhaps on another level, which is that what this is really getting at, the way that I think about it, is that marriage is made up of many components. Marriage is made up of a variety of different components that exist in other contexts. Each of the components can exist in other halachic contexts outside of marriage. What's unique about marriage, what makes marriage into marriage, is that it's the coming together, it's the confluence, it's the convergence of all these different things that each exist on their own in other contexts, but then in this context, it's all of them together. So it's what some people talk about in as a what they call a comprehensive union. So what do I mean by that? What I mean is, well, let's think about the different components we just said in marriage. Okay? So you have monetary obligations to each other. Well, there's all sorts of monetary contracts and obligations and commitments people can make that have nothing to do with marriage. So people could create, theoretically for themselves, You know, as you just brought up, you know, the whatever the obligations are. In theory, you can have two people who will create the exact replica of those monetary obligations to each other, or any version of monetary obligations, and it has nothing to do with marriage. It could be a business partnership. It could be a gift. It could be a sponsorship. It could be an employer and an employee. It could be a loan. It could be whatever you want it to be. And there's all these different financial obligations and commitments that two people can create in a relationship with each other, but it has nothing to do with marriage. Similarly, the prohibitions that now fall into place when the marriage is created. Those prohibitions can be taken on by anybody in any context. The person can take a neder upon themselves, a vow upon themselves, to make somebody usser, to make somebody prohibited to them. And there's all sorts of laws that govern, you know, what relationships are permitted and what relationships aren't permitted. And there's all the same or very similar laws can be found in other contexts, and it's not necessarily about marriage. Even, and this is the one you would probably least expect, but even the intimacy, even that halacha has a structure in which there could be, this is very debated, and exactly what the parameters are very heavily debated, but there is a halachic institution called a pilegesh, in which a person could have children and might even be able to fulfill the mitzvah of pruravu outside of marriage, arguably. But there might be. According to everybody, there is some form of that. The question is how wide is that? But there's some form in which that exists. So what's unique about marriage? What's unique about marriage is that it's all three of those things together. That's what makes it unique. What's unique about marriage isn't any one of the specific singular components. It's about the fact that it's comprehensive. That is the uniqueness. That's what makes it singular and unlike anything else. And I think we can expand this further, because if you keep looking in the halachic sources as to what a marriage entails, if you look at source number 6, so let's read the Rambam together. The Rambam writes, Kishenose adam isha bein besula bein beula bein gedola bein katana. A person gets married, a man and woman get married, it goes through all different types of cases, but either way, the point is, when two people get married, achas bas Yisrael v'achas agiros, o mishuchars, yischayev la, in all these different cases, all forms of marriage, he is now obligated to her ba'asara dvarim. The man is obligated to the woman in 10 different things. The yiske ba'arbidvarim. And she is obligated to him in 4 things. He has the rights to 4 things from her. What are those 10 things that he's obligated to her? So the Rambam continues. Halacha beis. V'hasara shlosha mehen min ha-Torah. 3 of the 10 are from the Torah. Ve'elu hein. These are the 3. She'era ksusa ve'onasa. What does that mean? She'era elu mizonosa. He has to provide her with food. Kisusa kimashma, he has to provide her with clothing. Onasa lavo alea kederach kol haaretz. And onasa refers to relations. Vahashiva midivrei sof. And those are the 3 that he's obligated to her from the Torah. Vahashiva, there are 7 more that are rabbinic. What are the 7? Kulan tnai based in hain. Ha'echa mehin ikr ksuba is the amount he's obligated to her from the ksuba. Vahashar heman ikram tnai ksuba. And then the rest are the different obligations that are the details, the extras in the ksuba. But these are the things he's obligated. What are they? Le'aposa impulsa, to take care of her if she's sick. Livdosa imnishbase, if she's taken captive, he has to redeem her, he has to rescue her. Le'kavra kishatamos, he has to take care of her after she passes. Vilios nizones minachasa v'yosheves beveser achar moso kol zman al menusa. And if he passes first, he has to have a plan set up in place so that she'll be taken care of afterwards. Vilios binoseha mimenu nizonos minachasa v'achar moso achis arsu. And that her children will be taken care of by him also after he dies. Velios, but until they get married and can be taken care of by somebody else. Velios banea azachar mimenu yorshin ksubasa yeser al chelkam yirusha shem acheim, and that her children will also get from his ksuba. These are the different obligations he has to her. All these different things. V'harba shezocheh bahen kulam midivrei sofrim. The 4 that he gets from her are from divrei sofrim, which is an interesting phrase. What does divrei sofrim mean? It would seem to mean that it's from the Rabbanan, from the rabbis, but that's actually a very questionable, debated term of that some kind of maybe in-between status. It's not exactly explicit in the Torah, but it's not exactly rabbinic. What are those 4 things? Eluhein, Leos Maisa Yadeha Shalo, money she earns goes to him, to their joint account. V'Leos Mitzi Asa Shalo, things that she acquires or finds. V'Shiyeh Ochel Kol Peros Nechasa B'Chayeha, V'Mesa B'Chayev Yerushana, he inherits her, he gets from her profits. V'Hu Kodem L'Chol Adem B'Yerusha, he's the first person to inherit if she passes before him. Okay, so there's this mutual kind of obligation in both directions, and it's split up as to who's obligated in what. That's the financial aspect of the relationship, the financial commitment. But it's a very comprehensive type of financial. It's not like you owe me X dollars, right? It includes taking care of the person when they're sick. It includes taking care of them in their passing. It includes taking care of their offspring in their future, etc. All these kinds of things. The Rambam in source number 7 adds more things that the marriage includes. Essentially, here he just quotes, we don't have to read it inside, but he just quotes the obligation of fulfilling the mitzvah of puravu, of having children, within the context of a marriage. I mentioned before that it could be that there's a way to do that outside the context of the marriage, but there's specifically a kiyum, a fulfillment of fulfilling that within the context of marriage. Okay, yeah.
So why, so it seems like all three are important for marriage, but for the engagement, we just do one. Right.
So that, right, because the conclusion, the maskana, is that you only need to do one. The way we're understanding it is that by doing any one of them, it kind of triggers the release of all three.
But we do the money one.
We do. Yes, because we do the ring. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So we don't want anyone to think, oh, maybe it is allowed, but it seems like that's the one that we choose and not any of the other two.
Yes, that, yeah. I mean, I think that seems to have become the minhag Yisrael. Yeah, yeah. I don't know if that always was, but definitely nowadays, that's for sure the standard. Yeah.
Saying if they learned this and heard what you're saying, like, oh, well, I could do one of them, and I might choose the third. Mm-hmm. I could see some of my friends saying that. So yeah. I'm asking you: is it a tradition we all do number one, or you can choose?
I mean, at this point, it would definitely seem to be the very widespread, prevalent custom to do number one. And the Gemara talks about doing number three.
Do
yeah.
Because of our custom, that's what my answer would be to that person.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know. You have to speak to somebody who knows more than I do. The Gemara talks about people doing number three as the kiddushin. Yeah, sure. It was and not an uncommon practice actually. The Gemara names the I forgot. The Gemara actually has a term for the name of the city. There was a city that was the widespread practice. Yeah. Nowadays, it's not that certainly wouldn't be, but yeah.
Nowadays it just happens all the time, so then they're engaged.
If you're doing it with the intention of engagement.
Sorry, I think you're getting into this.
Yeah, no, it's okay. If you do it with the intention of engagement, yeah.
If you're not, then it's just nothing. It's just,
I don't think so, yeah.
It's enough.
Yeah.
All right, but
yeah.
Isn't it like they do that for the engagement, but for the marriage, you've got all three, and that's why we do the kiddushin and the nisuin on the same day.
So again, that's what I was saying before that what we refer to as engagement is not halachic engagement. What we refer to culturally as engagement has no halachic significance at all. The engagement used to be done, that the engagement was done about a year or so before the actual nisuin, and that engagement had a lot of halachic ramifications. Right. Nowadays we don't really do that. Nowadays we just do the kiddushin and the nisuin together under the chuppah. But yeah, yeah, yeah.
When the men are sitting by the chassan's tish and the chassan signs the witnesses sign the tuba, I wonder how many chassans really know what mayas, kukim, kesef, and...
Yeah,
I don't even know if they know what they're really saying.
Right, true, yeah.
Because anybody had an obligation to know, am I obligated to give my wife $10,000 a year?
Right. Right. Well, that's a whole other story. Yeah.
The that the woman has to, give to the husband, all her earnings, right? Like, do women actually know about it when they're getting into the marriage?
That's a good question.
Today it's probably not the case, hopefully, but back then Gemara, actually spells out what a woman is supposed to do, like spinning a certain amount of wool, like at her quarters, as
right.
How much work she's obligated to do.
Yeah.
And again, do we know about it? Especially women who are converting into Judaism, for the sake of marriage, do they know what they're getting into?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know. Definitely a good question. Yeah. Yeah.
Financial demands. Like he doesn't want to pay the ksuba,
I don't think he can do that.
Can't do that?
I don't think so.
I've seen it.
Yeah, could be. I don't know. These things are above my pay grade, but I don't...
It's kind of like extortion. Like, if the woman wants her get, she's got to relinquish all financial claims. This is not uncommon.
Mm.
It's a blackmailing, and it happens, yeah. But the woman wants to get, so she just...
You're saying that... I guess I could see how it could happen, meaning if she would just... meaning he's obligated to ksuba to her, but if she just is mocheles, if she just says, I'll forego it, so
well,
then I guess, you know, but...
Right. She won't get the get unless she...
Right.
It was under pressure, like,
yeah.
She needs the money.
Right.
He doesn't want to support the children,
right.
And he doesn't want to give any money.
Right.
So it's still, it's a valid get, right?
No, I have no idea. I have no idea.
My question is he still really obligated to me?
I have no idea. Sorry. Yeah. Say it again?
Tanayim.
Yeah.
If you did Tanayim like a month before or whatever.
Right.
That's a shtar, right?
I don't think so. I think that's something else. I think it's something else. I don't think, I could be wrong, but I don't think we typically do shtar. I don't think we really
do
the shtar at the wedding.
Do it, but,
meaning people have Tanayim at the wedding, but I don't think that's the shtar Kiddushin. It's not a shtar Kiddushin. They do, in Hasidic communities, they do shtar Kiddushin. Oh, wow, cool.
Where they do a
No, Shnar Tanayim everybody does, but I'm saying that it's...
I'm saying,
yes. Yeah, months before the wedding, right. We just do it like ceremoniously at like the, you know, at the Bedeckin, but it's not... I mean, at the Chassan's Tish, but it's not really, but it's more of... That's more just like a throwback, you know.
The Shnar
Kiddushin, I don't think we do. I don't think. I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
The Shnar is not considered?
No, Ksuba's something else.
Right.
Ksuba's something else, yeah. Right. None of that's the Shnar Kiddushin. I don't think.
But I've seen tonight in that
right.
Before.
Sure. But I don't think that's the Shtar Kiddushin. That's just some. That's
no.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, in response to women not knowing what they're getting into when they get married, it didn't matter if you could read every single word. None of us know what we're getting.
Yeah, that's why I was laughing before. That's why I said that's a whole other story. Agreed. No one knows what they're getting into. Yeah, we do it together, yeah.
But when people do engaged, do get engaged, and a man gives a woman a diamond ring, right, engagement ring, that's kissive, right? So
yes.
Why are we saying that this does not constitute engagement if he gives her something?
Because they don't do it with the intention of engagement. He doesn't say any of the phrases. They don't do the full halachic obligations to make an engagement.
Oh, so he says to say...
Harea Mekudeshesli, they have to have witnesses there, you know, they would have to, there'll be a whole... right. Okay, let's keep going. So the Rambam in source 8, if you turn the page, the Rambam says, Shivas Yimei HaPesach, 7 days of Pesach, Shmonas Yimei HaChag, the 8 days of Sukkot, Imshar Yom Tovim, along with the other Yom Tovim, Kulam Asurim Behespit V'Tainis, you're not allowed to eulogize or to fast on those days. V'chayiv Adam Lihios Behen Sameach V'Tov Lev, a person is supposed to be engaged in joy. Hu Ubana V'Ishto Ubnei Beso, him and his children and his wife and his whole household, V'chol Anuvim Alav, and all who accompany him. Shenemar v'samachta b'chagecha, as it says in the pasuk, that you should be rejoicing on the holidays. V'afal pisha simcha ha'murakan hi korban shlamim, even though it refers specifically in that context to the korban that's brought in the Beis HaMikdash. K'mosh anu mevar mehilchas chagiga. Yesh b'chlal osa simcha, included in that is also, in addition to the korban, is also the simcha of l'smach hu ubanav ubnei beso kol echad ve'echad karelo, is to give joy to all those people we just listed, to all the people that a person is that a father or a parent or a husband takes care of in his household, is to make sure that he is doing something to increase the joy of each of those people in his household on the holidays. Ketzad, how do you do that? Haktanim, how do you do it for the ketanim? Nosin lam klayus ve'gozim, you give them McDonald's, you give them candies or nuts, whatever it was back then. Probably wouldn't get away with nuts nowadays. V'hanashim kone lahem begadim v'tachshitim naim, and for the women, clothing and jewelry. Kifi mamono v'hanashim ochlem basar v'shosin yayin, and for the men, meat and wine. Right? But the Rama also explains elsewhere that these are just examples. It's not limited to this. It's whatever you know would make the person happy. So these are kind of classic you know, generalization examples, but it could be any variation of any of these things that you know would bring joy to this person. So we see here, just adding again to the different elements that exist within a marriage, is that there's actually an obligation from the husband to the wife to provide joy. There's actually a halachic obligation to provide joy within the context of the marriage. Now, in the narrow sense, that shows up specifically in this halacha of v'samachta b'chagecha on the holidays. But again, what I'm trying to get at is that halachically speaking, what we're seeing is that marriage is something that is comprehensive to all these different aspects of a relationship. Because again, this halacha of making somebody happy is not only to the husband to wife, it's also parent to child. It's also anybody in his household. So it's not unique to the marriage in its own right, but what becomes unique is that, again, the marriage is the bringing together of all these different components. It's the comprehensive nature of the relationship. Similarly, the Rambam writes in Source 9, V'chein tiknu chacham mishakol ainose besula yisameach ima shivas yamim. The Rambam says that the chachamim established that when a person gets married, he's supposed to be home with her and engaging in joy and making her happy for 7 days. Eino osik b'malachto, he doesn't go to work. V'lo nose v'nosim b'shuk, ela ochel v'shosa v'sameach. He's supposed to be with her and bringing joy. So again, just another example of where there's this obligation of bringing joy into the relationship. The Rambam in the next source says, V'chein tzivu chachamim, the chachamim also established, shia adam mechabedish isto yoser migufo, that a husband is obligated to respect and honor his wife more than himself. V'ohava kegufa, and to love her as himself. So now the Rambam is bringing in an addition. We saw so far financial, we saw legal restrictions, we saw intimacy, we saw creating a future by having children, we saw joy. Now the Rambam is bringing in honor and love. Vim yesh lo mamon marbe betovasa kefi hamamon, he should give to her as much as he can within his budget. V'lo yatel aleha ema yesera, he should not be too overbearing or too powerful or too strong in a way that creates fear. V'ya diburo ima benachas, he should speak gently, he should speak softly. V'lo ya'atze v'lo roges, he shouldn't conduct himself in a way that brings sadness or brings strife or fighting or conflict. V'chein tzivu chacham ala isha, and so too for the woman, for the wife, shetia mechabedas is baila biyoser, that she should honor and respect him, biyoser midai, tremendously, v'yelo aleha mora, that she should be in a state of awe of him, she should look up to him with respect. So the Rambam is bringing in these other components as well. Now, we have many, again, just bringing out this point, we have many contexts in which there's people that we speak about respecting or loving. Parents love their children. There's a mitzvah to be in awe of a Talmud Chacham, right? We have all these things. So these things, again, are not unique to marriage. What's unique is that it's all of these things. There is no other relationship that would include all the things we've listed so far. Every one of them can be found in another relationship, but there's no other relationship that has all of them. And all of this is really rooted in the original source of where did marriage begin. Where marriage began in Source 10 is that Hashem looked at his creation. And he said, "Vayomer Hashem Elokim." Hashem said, "Lo tov heyos adam levado, esa lo ezer kenegdo." It is not good. It is not okay for people to be alone. People cannot live alone. I don't know if anybody saw recently the Surgeon General's report about what they call the epidemic of loneliness. Anybody see this? It's like an 87-page report that the Surgeon General just put out, speaking about what they're calling an epidemic of loneliness in America. That the statistics of people who are experiencing loneliness has gone way up. I think they said that the average conversation, the average amount of time people spent in non-work related conversations, just socializing, in 2000 or approximately 2000 was on average 60 minutes a day. In 2000, I think it was 2020, so this is before COVID. Before COVID, it was down to 20 minutes a day on average. What they found is that the health risks of increased loneliness, somebody who hits a certain threshold of loneliness is like the equivalent of smoking 15 cigarettes a day. So that's the effect on a person's health. It outlines a whole host of these different things. Marriage is rooted in the need to feel that you're living life in a shared experience. That we're living life in a shared experience. That we're not living life in an isolated experience. And that happens through this comprehensive relationship. That's what's unique about it. I can have this friend who I have a good time doing this with, and I can have this chavrusa who I can enjoy learning with, and I have this mentor or teacher or coach who I have this, you know, I have this respect for, and I can have, you know, my business partner who I have the financial, you know, relationship with, and I can have all these different relationships, but in every one of those, they're narrow. They're siphoned off to a specific aspect of my life. So what that means is that more fundamentally, I still exist alone. I exist alone because me as my whole self is still alone. Yes, I have this person for this thing, and I have that person for that thing, but me in my being still is living in a state of me as myself. What marriage is supposed to be doing is supposed to be taking it that in every element, every aspect of life, there's this shared relationship. It takes all these components and it brings them together. Just to give you one more example of this, if you look at Source 11, something we're all familiar with, this is one of the Sheva Brachos. Sameach tesamach reim ha'ahuvim. It talks about, again, the simcha, the joy of reim ha'ahuvim, which is a description of friends. So marriage also includes friendship, right? So all these different components. We have friends, and then we have people we do business with, and then we have people that we are in respect of, but what marriage is the bringing together of each of those things together. And I think that that's a very, at least I think, is a very powerful way of thinking about what marriage really is and how it's so unique when we engage it in that kind of comprehensive way. What I want to just end with, we only have a few minutes left, is that in Source 13 here, to just transition this over into understanding how this relates to our relationship with Hashem. So this is one of my favorite tefillos we have, one of my favorite piyutim. It's a poem. It goes back quite a while. And we say it specifically on Yom Kippur, before we do vidoy. So we say, "Ki anu." This is between Jewish people and Hashem now. So we're transitioning the parallel. "Ki anu amecha va'ata Elokeinu." We say to Hashem, we are your nation, and you are our God. "Anu vanecha va'ata avinu." We are your children, and you are our father. "Anu avadecha va'ata adoneinu." We are your servants, and you are our master. "Anu kahalecha va'ata chelkeinu." We are your congregation, and you are our portion. "Anu nachal asecha va'ata goraleinu." We are your portion, and you are our destiny. "Anu tzonecha va'ata ro'enu." We are your sheep, and you are our shepherd. "Anu charmecha va'ata notreinu." We are your vineyard, and you are our keeper. "Anu pol asecha va'ata yotzeinu." We are your creations, and you are our creator. "Anu re'ayasecha va'ata dodeinu." We are your beloved, and you are our beloved. "Anu segulasecha va'ata lokeinu." We are your treasure, and you are our God. "Anu amecha va'ata malkeinu." We are your people, your nation, and you are our king. "Anu mamirecha va'ata mamireinu." We are your designated ones, and you are our designated one. What I think is so amazing, we need a lot more time to really delve into this, but I think is so amazing about this poem is we just described so many different types of relationships that in most contexts you would think of as being mutually exclusive. To say that within one relationship it's a king and, you know, and servant relationship, but it's also a loved and beloved, and also, you know, a God and a parent and a child. These are all different relationships that in most contexts are singular. It's only this relationship or only that relationship. But actually, the idea is that our relationship with God, with Hashem, is entirely comprehensive. It includes all of these things. Because actually, it's deeper than any of these things. It's none of them, and it's all of them. Because it's more than all of them. But the closest thing we can get to give any form of a metaphor to describing our relationship with Hashem, because nothing can be a metaphor for it, because it's so comprehensive, because Hashem is with us and we're in relationship with Him in every single aspect, in every single way of our lives. So the closest thing we can do to provide any form of metaphor is to take every type of positive relationship in the world that exists and say it's all of those, and then somehow it's none of them by being all of them and more. Which I think is in some way parallel to what we're describing here about marriage in general, is that the uniqueness of marriage is not any one of the components. The uniqueness of marriage is the bringing together of all those different components into one relationship between one person and another person, to have all those aspects shared, all those aspects of life to be lived in a shared experience. And the gift of what Hashem and what Torah has brought into our lives is that we actually can have that in two different planes. We can have that in the halachic construct of a marriage, and we can also have that in our relationship with Hashem Himself that brings together all these different relationships.